I'm sure I'll hear. Baruch Haim HaKadosh, Parshas Vayigash, Tav Shin Ayin Zayin. Speaking of, did you guys have Minchia?
Yes. Waiting for you.
Okay, so we'll see. Let's start at the beginning. He has a whole bunch of questions. He has a lot of answers. I don't want to get stuck on all the pieces at the beginning, because we won't see anything else. But let's at least see the questions. Nechem Shalom, wow. What a turnout. Vayigash Elav. Guess you guys are starving for Torah from all the finals. Vayigash Elav. Tzarech Ladas. We need to understand. What's the Vayigash? It's not like Yosef and Yehuda were standing on opposite sides of the room until now. They've been having a conversation. This has been an ongoing process. Binyamin was accused at the end of last week's parsha with the great cliffhanger. Binyamin was accused of stealing Yosef's Gvia. And now Yehuda's stepping up to fight for Binyamin. So Vayigash Elav, Yehuda drew close to him. What does that mean? He drew close to him. He's already standing there. Did he draw closer? Did he take a step towards Yosef? Is it an attitude of drawing closer, that he's drawing closer in the sense that he's becoming more confrontational in how he's presenting himself to Yosef? Did he physically get closer to Yosef? But we need to understand what the Vayigash Elav is, again, says the Aruch Haim HaKadosh, because he's already medaver imo arat. He's been speaking to him until now, so nothing seems to have changed. V'razal darshu yu'yan sham divrayim. Chazal obviously have their drashos. V'tzarech ladas pshat hakasa. But we're trying to find pashut pshat. Again, the Vayigash Elav of Chazal has a lot of interpretations. One is, again, like I was saying, that he became more confrontational towards Yosef. And he got up in his face, even if that doesn't mean he physically got up in his face and got closer and more threatening in his actual positioning of his body, right? But his body language changed Vayigashil. So we need to understand what that means in a way that's b'derech hapshat and not in a way that Chazal offer their interpretations. Why does it have to say Vayigashil? Why can't it just say Vayigash Yehuda? If it says Vayigash Yehuda and Yehuda approached, we would understand that he's approaching Yosef because he's about to speak to Yosef. Oh, Tzarech Ledas. You find some weeks the Baruch Haim HaKadosh does this. He just starts off with like 15 questions. We've seen his style. He doesn't do this every piece. He doesn't pick apart every pasuk like this. There are mafarshim that do pick apart every pasuk like this. But some weeks he just starts off by shooting out a lot of questions. Do you have a minion at this point? People who would like to daven at the end? Who have yet to daven? Yeah, okay. Great, so we'll daven at the end together. V'ot tzarech ledas omro bi Adoni. We also need to understand why he says, bi Adoni. Lonoda haritzoy lama. What's he trying to do when he says, let's read the whole pasuk. Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Yehuda drew close to Yosef. Again, we need to understand why Vayigash, why Elav. Vayomer bi Adoni. If you please, my master, yidaber na avdecha davar ba'aznei Adoni, I would like to speak something into your ears. Va'al yichar apcha ba'avdecha. So does that mean he was asking permission to whisper in his ear? Then he's actually drawing close. He's asking permission to speak, but he's already speaking. It's like the person who says, can I ask you a question? Well, you just did, right? So obviously. Okay, so what exactly is this bi Adoni? Please, my master. Please, my lord. Why is he referring to him that way? What is he trying to... Again, if Yehuda's trying to be confrontational, so then why is he kissing up to Yosef and saying, Bi Adoni, please, my master? If you look at the Midrashim, he's threatening him that we're going to overturn Mitzrayim the same way we overturned... The same way we overturned Shechem when they took advantage of our sister Dina. So is he being confrontational, or is he humbling himself before Yosef and begging for his mercies? Right? If he's trying to say, don't get angry, so why doesn't it say, Bi Adoni, right next to the words, Va'al Yichar Apcha? He says, please, my master, I'd like to tell you something, don't get angry. Why doesn't he say, please, my master, don't get angry, I want to tell you something? Or I want to tell you something, please, my master, don't get angry. Why is the Bi Adoni separated from the Al Yichar Apcha, don't get angry with me? Okay. Ovitzarach ledas omer ba'ozne Adoni. Furthermore, we need to understand when he says, I want to speak something into my master's ears, as opposed to what? Speaking into his shoe? Why does it have to say, I want to speak in your ear? That's the place where one speaks. The Chazal Amru, she kansu dvar va'aznav. Obviously, Chazal again interpret that he wants the words to penetrate the ear. It's a beautiful piece of Shem Yishmuel. I think we once learned it. But the Shem Yishmuel talks about different parts of the ear. There's the outer part of the ear, and then there's the inner part of the ear. There's a medrash that says, I think it's in Hazino. Does that make sense? Hazino Hashemayim. Yeah, Hazino. Makes sense. The medrash Tanchum and Hazino. Sometimes the medrash Tanchum will start with the Dvar Halacha. So the medrash Tanchum says, if a person has an ear ache on Shabbos, a very serious ear ache, you can even mechal Shabbos for the pain in the ear. So Shem Yishmuel says, pain in the ear, mechal Shabbos. It's not life-threatening. So Shem Yishmuel says, well, it depends. There's the outer aspect of the ear, and then there's the inner aspect of the ear. The inner side of the ear, so to speak, touches the brain. So it touches a very critical part of a person's physicality. So the Shem Yishmuel says, the same thing is true in regard to one's spirituality. Right? There are outer dimensions of our spiritual being, and there are inner dimensions of our spiritual being. We once learned a couple of years ago, I'm trying to remember who was here at the time, we learned the Chavetz Chaim's Hakdama to the third Chelek of the Mishnah Brura, where the Chavetz Chaim says that there are mitzvos that are life and death mitzvos, and there are mitzvos that are not life and death mitzvos. There are mitzvos that you can live without, even though it'll be crippling to not have in your life, and there are mitzvos that you can't live without. So Chavetz Chaim says, Shabbos, a person without Shabbos, Halacha says, a person who's Machal Shabbos is like a guy in Halacha. Obviously, the Pintel Yid is alive and well. But in terms of the Halachic presentation of the person, if you cut off Shabbos from your life, you cut off your head. You can't live without a head. You can't live without a heart. A person gives up other mitzvos, so it's like losing an arm, God forbid. That's a terrible tragedy and will radically change this person's life, but they're still alive. But there's certain mitzvos that you can't live without. Right? There's parts of a person that he can't live without. So Chazal say that when Yehuda says to Yosef, I want my words to penetrate your ear, obviously he's talking about it should enter the deepest recesses of the ear, and it should really strike a chord in the most deep and intense way. But again, that's Derech Drash. B'Derech Pshat, why does he need to say, I want to speak into your ear? It seems excessive. O Tzarech L'das, we furthermore need to understand, again he's picking apart every phrase of the Pasuk, when the Pasuk says, Ki Kamocha Kaparo, you're as great as Paro. Ki lo noda nesinas tamza lehechan chozeres. Va'adraba, litzad shu gadol kaparo yakbid almir hanhagas kavar gedula. Again, you have this paradox. On the one hand, he's confronting him, and he's stepping up in a way that is very confrontational. On the other hand, he's praising him. So why do you need to say you're like Paro? If you want to say that he's great, why make that comparison? Ki kamocha kaparo. And adarab, if you're on the one hand saying you're such an honored person, so why is he overstepping all these boundaries in terms of his ability to speak to a person of such great power? Right? What about the mir hanhagas kavod gedula? If he's so great, so why are you pushing your way in? Vayigash I love. Now he goes on and he explains that really vayigash I love was literal vayigash I love, that there is a circle of guards that protect the king. And to come directly in front of the king is not a small thing. Let's just read a little bit more of the next paragraph, and then I want to jump ahead a few paragraphs. Achim pshat hakosev hu. The answer perhaps is the following. Ki davi yaduo hu. Ki minhag hamalachim yeshu lifneim gedolei hamalchus v'sarayim v'yotzeim. That the way that the king sits on his throne is that there are layers of guards and important people who sit before him. The closer to the king, obviously, the more elevated a person is. So the way that the one sits before the king, there are those who sit before the king are the gedolei hamalchus v'sarayim v'yotzeim, the king's advisors and his closest noblemen. Vayim ba ish al davar mishpat o davar me'es hamelech lo yamod v'hefzik ben hamelech v'sarav hayoshim rishonu b'malchus v'chutz li'igul yamod v'sham yedaber. If you want to speak to the king, you don't march right up in front of the king. You speak to the king from one of the outer rings, from one of the outer circles. To get an audience with the king, even from a distance, is a very chashuv thing. Up to this point, Yehuda was standing on the outer circles. Yosef, the Melech, or the Viceroy, right, had many layers of important officials and guards who were standing in front of him, and Yehuda was Mibachot, who was on the outer ring of this circle. Vayigash elav, literally, he pushed his way forward. Perish, shenichnas lifnim michitzaso, va'amud ben hamelach uvein asarim, kedei shelo yishamu dvar lezulas hamelach. He pushed ahead, and he wanted to only be heard by the melech, that he wouldn't have his words passing over the heads and the hearts and the ears of all of the other sarim. Now, if he says, very interesting, he says, if you look in the Tshuvos Maharam Alashkar, the Maharam Alashkar and Tshuva Simen Tzadi Gimel explains that there's a difference between low and a love. That we sometimes think that there are certain words in Tanakh that are interchangeable. Some Rishonim and some Achronim learn words in Tanakh as being synonyms. The Malbim, of course, very famously, the Malbim made very famous his Shita that there are no synonyms, that every word has some degree of nuance. So there's a difference between what? Speaking to someone, low, and Vayidaber Elav, or Vayigash Elav. Okay, and therefore it could be, he says, look in that Tshuva from the Maharam Alashkar, where he discusses the difference, and that might shed light on this phrase, Vayigash Elav. Elav might be a much more direct type of connecting with someone, both in terms of physical presentation and in dibur, than love. Speaking to someone versus speaking to someone. Yeah.
It's kind of a bit different, but like the word a love, also like if you take it literally, it's like his cow, like so Yosef's like surrounded by all these people, and then all the things you're mentioning are like all these like more of inner dimensions. So Yehuda comes to him and he doesn't say, it's not that he moves forward, it's just he like by gosh, like he brings up his God, and then be Adonai is like something like be is like inside. So like inside, like I know you feel differently about this, and then it says Pi Kamocha like Paro, because he's like, you think it's like you're in the state of kind of being like Paro, but you're really not like this.
So I would say the end. I like what you're saying a lot. I would say the end of the part is Pi Kamocha Kaparo. Right, that if Yehuda is saying, listen, at the end of the day, we're in a very, very difficult situation right now, and it looks like our world is about to collapse, and me, Yehuda in particular, I'm in really big trouble, because I swore on my life, basically, and my Olam Haba, that I'm going to bring back Binyamin to my father, but maybe Yehuda's Vayigash Elav, you're saying he approached his God, or he brought his God forward to Yosef, and he said, Bi Adonai, realize that there's, I would say, he was saying to Yosef, there's someone above you, Ki Kamocha Kaparo, the same way that Paro tried to make himself a God, right? When he was really a false God, so maybe he's calling it out and saying, listen, right now you think you have the upper hand, but I still got my ace in my, you know, or, in my pocket. I've got my winning card.
Well, that's why he's speaking to his inner ear, because like he's really like he's hearing Yosef's hearing from all these people that he's a certain ruler, but he's also saying, no, there's like something else, like more inside you have to hear.
Right. Yeah. Definitely. What to think about there? Yeah.
Is the Orach HaYam going to take us like on a? You show us how this could be a form of like a voda, like push your way to the front.
Let's get to this. I want to jump ahead to that. Let's jump to the paragraph. Jump ahead a couple of paragraphs where it says V'derech Jirash Yisabar Omro V'Yigash Elav. You see that a few paragraphs ahead? On the next page, we quote the pasuk in Mishlei. V'Derech Jirash, perhaps we could explain the following. V'Yigash Elav, going back to the original question, he was already standing in front of him. So he told us it could be B'Derech HaPshat, that there are layers of individuals who protect the king, noblemen and officers and guards, and now Yehuda physically moves forward. The other way to explain it is that he didn't physically move at all. But in terms of his emotional connection to Yosef, he moves forward. What does that mean? He quotes the pasuk in Mishlei Chaf Zayin. Very famous and beautiful pasuk. Kemayim aponim laponim, kein lev ha'adam la'adam. Just as water, just as face reflects face in the water, in the olden days, there weren't things that we have today called mirrors. So if you wanted to see your reflection, you would see your reflection in the water. So the same way that the water reflects the face that you present to it, and if you smile at your own reflection, you'll see it smiling back at you, says Shlomo Melech Kein Lev Adam La'adam, so too the heart of man reflects the heart of man. Which means that Yehuda decided to use a technique, which is a very powerful and real technique, that if I look to my enemy and I smile and I have good feelings towards my enemy, so my enemy, it'll be impossible for him not to have good his aurus of good feelings towards me. That's what Yehuda was trying to do. He was trying to create a feeling of attachment to the person in front of him, to who we'll see in a second, in his mind is what? Is a Rasha, is an Ovid of Zara, is the viceroy of Mitzrayim. But Yehuda says, if I can somehow muster strong feelings, which is so against my nature, to love this other human being who is so different than me, and even in Halacha there's a shaila if I'm allowed to have good feelings towards him, which we'll talk about in a minute, but then maybe he'll have good feelings towards me. And maybe in that way, I can save Binyamin. Yeah.
You also see it when he says, Kekamocha Keparo.
Yeah.
Because Kekamocha Keparo is the same as Rea. Keparo, Reacha. Reacha Kamocha, Reacha Kamocha. Kamocha Keparo.
Interesting. Very good. Right, right. And Yaakov shows up at the well in Vayetze, and he calls them brothers, and all of a sudden they like him, even though he's a total stranger, versus Noah, who spent 120 years giving muster and called everyone idiots and got nowhere with the world. Yeah.
Why is it against Yehuda's nature to show?
Oh, so he's about to say. So let's see that inside. So he says, "Kamayim panam lepanam kein leva adam laadam." V'lezeh nischakim Yehuda lahato slave Yosef elav l'rachamim. Yehuda, with great wisdom, tried to turn Yosef's heart towards him that he should have mercy upon him. V'hikriv daito ritzono elav la'ahavo u'lechabvo kedei shetiskariv daito sheYosef elav l'kabel dvarv u'fiuso. V'yigash elav Yehuda was a change of emotional stance towards Yosef. He said, with great wisdom, he decided that if I can show love to this person, if I can have feelings of closeness to this person, then hopefully Yosef will be receptive to the words that I speak to him and to the appeasement that I'm trying to offer. That's the answer to your question. He needed to force himself to do this. It was hard for him to do this because naturally, it was unnatural for a Ben Yaakov, for someone from the monotheistic world of the house of Yaakov Avinu, of Torah, to love, to have genuine feelings of love and kirvas levavos for an Ovdei Avodah Zarah. For someone who, in his mind, presumably, is a worshipper of the Nile River. Ki lo yanuach shevet haresha al gorah hatzadikim. Of course, the pasuk can tell. It was very hard for Yehuda to feel this way. The way the Navi says that the flesh of the Egyptians or of the Avodah Zarah in general is no different than donkey flesh, right? Again, Mitzrayim was Ervas Haaretz. Mitzrayim was the most crude and lewd place on planet Earth. A place of complete immorality and Avodah Zarah. So much so that it wasn't so. The fact that Yosef refused to submit himself to Eishes Potiphar, right, was like a big chiddush, because in Mitzrayim that kind of stuff would happen. So it was very hard for Yehuda if you have fake feelings of love towards someone else, it doesn't work. But if you can genuinely awaken feelings of love and attachment to your enemy, then the enemy will kamayim upon him upon him, kein leva adam la'adam. Okay, leze hutzrach lefisha lafoch hamutba ulahagisho bilvavo ulahashivo bitavone de libe. To have a real taivas halev for this Rasha, to go against his natural teva, his metzias. That someone from the family of Yaakov should love and over the Avodah Zarah was a very, very hard thing to do. Now, I heard a shir last night, a really amazing shir from one of my rabbeim, Rabbi Shmuel Bron Shlita. Had the chus of hearing it live and in person, which is a chiddush. I don't get to go to shiurim so often. So much so that when I left the house and my children said to my wife, she told me when I got back, the kids said to her, "Where'd daddy go?" They said, "He went to a shiur." They said, "He went to give a shiur?" I said, "No, he went to go to a shiur." Like, he does that? Like, yeah, once in a while. So I got to go to a shiur last night, which was a big treat for me. And he spoke about a piece from Rav Nachum Mendel of Vitebsk. Rav Mendel of Vitebsker was one of the early Talmidim of the Maggid of Mezrich, ended up in Eretz Yisrael, helped to move Talmid of Baal Shem Tov to Eretz Yisrael. And he has an amazing piece in his Sefer Pre-Art where he quotes this Orach Chaim HaKadosh, quotes this piece, I was very excited, and he raises the question from a halachic perspective. He actually doesn't even point out that the Orach Chaim, what the Orach Chaim points out, that it was hard emotionally for someone from the family of Yaakov to love in a, to what he perceives to be an Ovdei Avodah Zarah. But the Vitebsker says, what about the halacha? Lo sechanim, you're not allowed. You're not supposed to show feelings of love, right? And this leads to obviously a lot of problems when we express intense feelings of love for an Ovdei Avodah Zarah. And he has a whole arichus. But one of the things he talks about, and the main point of last night's shir, which is beautiful, I'm sure it'll be online, you should listen to it. One of the main things he talks about is that sometimes lefi shah, that in certain circumstances, one is called upon to express attachment to something which is not necessarily a good thing. And I'll explain what that means in a second. And he compares it, he says, like we have this experience when it comes to what? When it comes to eating, karbanos, and davening. What does that mean? What does that mean when it comes to eating, karbanos, and davening? So essentially, the Vitebsker goes on and he explains that there are certain things in this world that want to have a tikkun and that are calling out to us to be lifted up. It might be a slice of pizza. It might be an animal that's going to be offered as a karban, right? It might be davening. It might be that when you're davening and all of a sudden sometimes you have the unusual experience of you're about to daven and you came on time to davening and you maybe even went to the mikveh beforehand and you found yourself a good seat, right? And you mamish like a lot of the nice amount of time and you get to Shemona Esrei and all of a sudden these crazy thoughts and your Hurim Rahim, improper thoughts, are popping into your head. So where's that coming from? So the Tapsker explains that it's coming from the lower waters, the Mayim Tachtonim, which cry out, like the Medrash says, on a Be'inah L'mehevi K'mei Malka, we also want to be before the king. There are lower things in this world that want to be lifted up. Now, he says, you're not allowed to sometimes go to certain places and engage those things, to try to, you know, then you turn out, you end up Shabtai Tzvi, Rachman Litzlan, right? But there are times where these things come our way. And that's what's happening here. Yehuda then will see that brothers are realizing, as they have been realizing in the last two parashios, that hold on a second, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is putting us in this position, that there's a reason this is happening. So if you find yourself in that situation, you shouldn't meditate upon negative things and then try to drag them into the realm of Kedusha. But there are things that we are forced to encounter in this world, let's say eating, right? Where it's a very gashmiyazdik thing, and eating, of course, is a muscle for all of physical pleasures, where a person has to engage in those things, it's part of life, and it's very gashmi, right? And I have no choice, so once I'm forced to be involved, then I have to try to elevate it. The same way that you make a bracha, you're walking down the street, and you see a beautiful non-Jewish person. There's a bracha that the person makes. Okay, I don't know if most people have had the opportunity to make this bracha, right? But it's on the books. If you're walking down the street and you see a non-Jewish supermodel walking down the street and she's the most attractive woman you've ever seen in your life, right? There's a bracha that you say on this. The Gemara talks about it. Rabbi Akiva made this bracha. Rabbi Akiva explained. I said, Akiva, you were checking out non-Jewish women in the marketplace? He says, no. It was a Karen Zavis. I got to a corner. I rounded the corner. And there she was standing in front of me. So when I find myself in that situation, I'm not supposed to go looking for it. But when I find myself in that situation, I have to try to elevate it. So that's exactly what's happening here. Yehuda finds himself in this situation. He didn't sign up for this situation. He ends up in this situation. Now that he ends up in this situation, says Rav Nachum Mendel of Vitebsk, who's raising the question of the Arachai from a halachic perspective, how am I allowed to do this? It was hard. It was hard for Yehuda to have feelings of love towards this thing because it doesn't feel right. I'm being osing in such a gashmias thing and I'm trying to lift it up. But again, if a Kadosh Baruch Hu puts you in that situation, it's your avoda to lift up the fallen sparks. Okay? Since I know that not everyone's going to take my homework assignment seriously and listen to the shir, I'll tell you the best story that he told during the shir. The best story he told during the shir was that there was a famous chassid of the Baal HaTanya, Rav Shmuel Munkus. And he said one time he was from Brengen with the chassidim, and it was getting late at night, and they had a lot of l'chaims, and they were still going, and whatever food had been put out had been consumed, and they were hungry. The chaver was hungry. So the Shmuel said, it's not a problem. He said, I have a little sheep in the backyard, and we'll shecht it, and we'll barbecue it. He said, my wife relies on this sheep for wool, to make clothing for our kids and stuff like that, but whatever, we'll figure it out. So he takes the sheep, and they shecht the sheep, and they grill it up, and they forbring the rest of the night. Okay. So next morning, in the Rebbetzin, Mrs. Shmuel Munkus comes and she says, "What happened? What happened to Shepsala? Do you know where the sheep is now?" So he said, "Yes." He said, "I know where it is. I know exactly where it is now." He says, "Yesterday, our little Shepsala used to stand out in the backyard and say, ba, ba, ba." He said, "Now, the sheep says, Hashem Echad." Now the sheep is in the Chassidim when the Makabal Omachas Shemayim, instead of saying, ba, it says, Echad. It drags out the Dalet of Echad, like a person's supposed to do it during.
So
the sheep got a tikkun. Sheep's in a higher place now. It went from being part of the Olam Habahami, right? And now it's within Yidden. So obviously she wasn't so happy about that, but okay. But that's what happened. So there's things that want to be lifted up. So when you find yourself, when you're Yehuda, and you find yourself standing in front of the viceroy of Mitzrayim, right? And you're wondering, how could I ever love such a thing? How could I ever do something with this? I should run away from it. So the Vitebsker says in a very Hasidic piece, no, you're not supposed to run away from it. When you find yourself in that situation, you have to engage in it and lift up the holy sparks. Again, you have to be careful not to pursue it in the wrong way. But when you're there, you have to make it into an elevated thing. Yeah.
So on that, there's the iskafia. So like that sounds like the second, like iskafia, like going and like incorporating right. It. But like there also isn't like when do you have to find the difference between when you're supposed to say no, like I'm not looking up and I'm like I'm going to keep walking versus okay, I just
right now I'm here.
Well, I'm here and so I'm looking.
Right. It could be it's partially related to, you know, do I really believe that I'm did Hashem send me or did I send myself here? Right? I was talking to someone earlier today, might be in the room, and we looked at a piece of Tzidkas HaTzadik, where a Tzadik says, don't be convinced that just because you're in a particular place and things are happening in a particular way, that's an indication that Hashem wants it to be that way. Just because things are working out for you doesn't mean that that's what Hashem wants. There's a metzias of the Gemara and Makos Daf Yud, b'derach shel demotza leilech molichan osa. The path that you choose, Hashem will lead you on. And he quotes, Rav Tzadok says, the same way the Gemara says what? The same way the Gemara says, haba l'tar misayayin osa, the Gemara says, haba l'tamei poischen lo. So Rav Tzadok says, there's a difference between what? Between misayayin oso and poschen lo. Misayayin oso means Hashem helps you. Habal etayir, if you're doing something tar, then Hashem's going to help you. Habal etamei, Hashem will allow it to work out. Poschen lo, He'll open it up, He'll let things happen. So you have to figure, it's a great question, and I don't know that I have an answer. How do you figure out, am I on a path, did Hashem put me in this situation, and now I'm in this tumah to elevate it? Or did I really like walk into the mud and say, "Whoa, look, Hashem put me in this situation"? Like, why was I hanging out there to begin with? And then a particular aspect of, "Oh no, Hashem sent this particular person over to me." The whole place you were hanging out was tumah. So the brothers didn't want to end up in Mitzrayim. They got sent by the Tzadik Hador Yaakovinu to Mitzrayim, and the series of events don't really make sense. And therefore, Yehuda says, "Okay, it must be that Hashem is putting this in my face, and now he's trying to elevate it." Okay, yeah.
An interesting point regarding that is like the difference between the brothers and Yosef is that Yosef literally got thrown by divine intervention into Mitzrayim, which is this whole idea of Tuma, whereas the brothers like were just in such a little area, like dealing with Tuma and kind of like their experience of like I don't know exactly, but like the idea that Yosef like with Asia Poti.
You're saying Yosef's right? Full like, Mitzrayim experience?
Yeah, I think Yosef like realized that like Hashem probably didn't put him in that situation, he put himself in that situation, that's why when he left, whereas with the brothers, it's like kind of this situation where they're now in this one moment in Mitzrayim and they have to make it
right. I hear. Different degrees to what, right, is it a momentary thing? Am I stuck here in like a broader sense? Okay, all right, let's jump ahead. Go to the paragraph, Omro bi Adoni. Let's answer that question, because he has a few very interesting answers that were very new to me, both B'derech HaPshat and B'derech HaDrush. So again, the question was, bi Adoni. What does it mean, bi Adoni? If you please my master. But the word bi means within me. So let's see how he reads it. Niskaven legimel dvar.
Yeah,
everyone see where we are? Niskaven legimel dvar in the left hand column on Resh Tesavav. V'neskaven legimel dvar. He had three things in mind when he said biaduni ha'aleph echad laval yomer elav Yosef lami yadaver hu lavad mikulam. First of all, Yosef might say back to him, right? He's saying, "Be Adonai, please, my master, if you'll listen to be me. I want to be the one to speak." So the first question might be, Yehuda, why are you speaking? Shouldn't the oldest of the brother of the family be leading this conversation? Right? You have a lot of chutzpah. Laval yomer elav Yosef, lama yadaber hu lavad mikulam. Why are you speaking so much more than everyone else? Uma gam b'masha kadam shehikir Yosef ki ruven abachor. If you remember earlier, from last week's parsha, Yosef arranged them in age order. So it's not like Yosef doesn't know who the Bechor is. Vayeshu lefanav ha-Bechor, v'gomer. He placed Reuven in the seat of the Bechor. V'im kein yomer, lama yedaber kol kach hu, v'lo achiv. Lazeh amar. So to that, Reuven, to that, Yehuda responded, because bi Adoni, the matter depends upon me a lot. Nogei ha-davar. Be nogei hadavar. It matters a lot to me. Kamosha ber lo besof, as he's about to explain. I was the one who put my neck on the line for my brother Binyamin. If I don't come back with Binyamin, I'm the one who took the achrayis. So that's why I have so much to say here. Vilios shechosh lo liskais kodem hagas hadavar elav lezek kodem tekev odio. So before Yosef would yell at him and ask him this question, right? Yehuda tried to preempt it by saying be Adoni, by trying to hint at the fact that there's a reason that I'm so involved here, because be nogei hadavar Adoni, because the matter depends upon me and is very relevant to me. So that's be Adoni, shot number one. Pshat number two, Habiz, Shineskavin liton taina hanishmas lahatzel binyamin. He wanted to offer something, and this pshat I thought was so good, b'derech ha-pshat, look what he writes, to explain very much b'derech ha-pshat why he's speaking. Be Adoni, you know what he's saying? Be Adoni, I'm the guilty one. You know why I'm telling you to take me into captivity? Earlier in one of the pieces we skipped, he says, take me into captivity because I'm much stronger than binyamin. Just look at me, I'm physically, I'll be a better eved for you. So financially, I'm a better investment. But now he's saying, no, be Adoni. You know why you should take me? I'm the guilty one. So Yosef is going to say back, you're the guilty one. But the cup was found in Binyamin's bag. So Yehuda says, just listen to the conversation here. I'm admitting that I stole it. Binyamin is denying that he has no idea how it got in his bag. So let me tell you what happened. I stole the cup. I put it in my brother's bag. I was embarrassed, right? I hid it in my friend's locker. Stole it out of, I stole it out of some other kid's bag. I hid it in my friend's locker just in case the principal would catch someone with it. But now I feel really bad. My friend's in trouble. So I'm coming to confess. Coming to confess that I was the one who committed the crime. Bi Adoni, perish. Ani ganavti agvia. Vihi nachtiv ba'amtachat binyamin. I placed it into Binyamin's satchel. U'mi'ata shuva sadin titein. Forget. I'm not trying to be a tzaddik and replace me. I'm just trying to tell the truth. I'm the one who should sit in captivity. Ki hu yilachid, ki Binyamin machish v'Yehuda modeh. Right? Just listen to our claims. Binyamin says, I don't know how this got here. And Yehuda says, I do know how it got there. I'm guilty. So, take me seriously. Be Adoni. I should be the avid. And third of all, and this is a totally different mahalach, what he's about to say, Hagimel Ramas HaKosav, the Pasuk is hinting to us, not so much that Yehuda was hinting this, but the Pasuk is hinting to us, and it's a theme that we've seen in the last couple of weeks. Ki asrara elav hi nasuna. That don't believe everything that you see before your eyes right now. We have to see the Torah in bigger and broader strokes. Namely, be Adoni. I'm talking to you, Adoni, my master. You're basically a king. But be Adoni. I'm Yehuda. I'm Shevet Yehuda. Malchus is really my lot in this room. Ki asrara elav hi nasuna. V'zeshir ha-dvarim bi taloi kinoi tevas Adoni ki hu ha-melech. Be Adoni. You can say it in two ways. He's going to say it in two ways now. He's going to say, be Adoni. First of all, realize that this notion of Adnos that you currently have is mine. Because I'm Yehuda. V'omer yedaber na perish. Yedaber ata bikinoi avdus lefisha. Right now I'm saying, be Adoni. Please my master. But I'm also hinting to the fact that be Adoni, that the notion of, again, of Malchus is mine. The concept of Malchus really belongs to me. For a moment, it's yours. Avalina davar omid kein, ki Yehuda hu ha-melech v'chiso yikon le'olam. But in truth, it will be restored. The Malchus beis David, the Malchus of Yehuda will be restored to me. So don't get any ideas that this is your Malchus and it's meant to last. As we know, the Ramban is very critical, coming on the heels of Hanukkah, the Ramban is very critical of the Chashmonaim for taking the Malchus, for erroneously taking the Malchus after their victory, and that's why, according to the Ramban, Malchus, the Chashmonai dynasty was completely destroyed. The Rambam, as many Achronim point out, seems to have a different shot. The Rambam, when the Rambam talks about the restoration of Malchus at the hands of the Chashmonaim, where the Rambam writes that in Hilchos Chanukah, many Achronim think that that's the Rambam's way of signing off and saying it wasn't necessarily such a bad thing. But the Ramban is very critical and says that no, it was a total usurpation of the power of Malchus Beis David, of Yehuda, and therefore maybe Yehuda is saying to Yosef, now, don't get any ideas, you're not really the Melech, I'm the Melech. Od Yirma Zakasov, the other way to say it, and this is even more exciting in terms of us taking a lesson in Avodas Hashem, Od Yirma Zakasov Omer Bi Adoni, Yosef, you know what I'm hinting to you? You know why you're a Melech? He doesn't even know he's Yosef yet. He thinks he's some Egyptian. But Bi Adoni, it's because of me that you became a Melech. All of your trials and tribulations, which eventually led to your Malchus, which I remind you, the Svarno says is arguably the longest Malchus in all of Tanakh. That for 80 years, Yosef is a Melech. Who else in Tanakh has such a Malchus? So Yehuda says, Bi Adoni. You have a lot of akaras tov you should have for me. Perish be'emtza usi hisagta zeh. You attained all of this because of me. Ki hu asovev liyosef adnos. I was the one responsible for your malchus. Why? Because I was the one who said, L'chu v'nim karenu liyishmeilim. Shemizeh nisgal gal adover v'hesig yosef ha'adnos. So once again, the person who you might be the most angry at, because I was the one who actually got you into Mitzrayim, but take a moment, catch your breath, and realize that you became a Melech in Mitzrayim, and I was the one who put you in this difficult situation, and you have to have a karza tov to me. Okay, let's hang on to the questions for a couple more minutes. I think I know some of the questions, but I want to see. Let me take the questions. Yeah, what do you want to say?
I wasn't going to really ask a question. Going to say that. Well, the question is why.
I forgot, you only say chidush.
No, why does Yosef break down after this? Because like maybe B is also like 12. So like with the 12. I mean, with the 12 shvatim. And how do you like open these up?
Saying once again, let's restore the achdus of the 12. Yeah. And that's totally the theme in the Midrashim and in the Sarma Kadoshim and in the HaTorah this week's part. Of the world of Yehuda and Yosef, Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David coming together. It's mamash the ultimate achdus parsha. So Bi Adoni. Bi Adoni. Yeah.
Earlier, I'm not sure for what example it was, but Yehuda was saying how he's not responsible for all of this. So why is he getting involved? And now, going back to the same.
Right, so the brothers are grappling, and again, we didn't see all the pieces inside, which is Chaval, because he really treats it well. Reb Chaim goes through it carefully. And again, you remember his shita from last week, that a Baal Bechira, we have to address that here. Right? On the one hand, we're transitioning now to Yosef's response to the brothers when he finally reveals himself is what? This was all Hashem. So, our response to that, as scholars of Orach Chaim HaKadosh this year, Tzarechi and Gadol. We learned the last 2 weeks that a person of Bechira, when a human being makes choices, that's not the Yad Hashem. That man has this crazy veto power to override the divine will. So why is Yosef so sure? No, this is all part of God's plan. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a few minutes. And that's obviously a big sugya, and really part two of what we started to talk about last week. But yeah, whether or not Yehuda feels guilty or he feels, you know, apologetic, right. We see there's a lot of
it was in the context that you were saying that should you put yourself in a position to win it, or like if you find yourself in a position,
right?
So that's what the context.
Right. So it could be now
like,
he's.
Oh, I never asked to come here.
Right.
And I was like thinking I had to say, oh, but you sold Yosef.
Right. We still have to, even when everything is said and done, we still have to ask ourselves the question, did the brothers do the wrong thing? There was a din Torah. They paskined against, so what, they paskined wrong? Rav Avadia Yosef paskined to be Matir Agunos, and their husbands never showed up. He had a protection in his Piske Halacha that never backfired. So did the brothers get the wrong psak? Wrong is a simplistic word. That's part of the why my question is a silly question. What do you mean wrong? B'ashkach el Yona, the Chovas Halavavos says this had to be. Right? And that's what the Svarim approached it. This had to be. So is Bechira operating different by these Sadiqim as opposed to the way it operates for us? Is it right? Is it wrong? Is it good in the end? Again, I go back to the lines. I think it's one of my favorite lines that we've seen so far in everything that we've learned. That when Parshas Vayeshev, when he asked the question, so if Yaakov sent Yosef on a mitzvah as a shliach mitzvah, so how did it backfire? And his answer was, it didn't backfire. Don't look at it with such a narrow view. Shenezek shetachliso hatava u'mayla gedola eino chashuv nezek. That a temporary moment of struggle and damage that is part of a much bigger, broader good is not a bad thing at all. We can't even call it bad.
Why?
Can't call it was the brother didn't do the wrong thing. Wrong, yeah, wrong if I look at it in this very narrow moment, it's wrong. But that's, you know, that the pasuk that sums it all up is lo yidach mimenu nidach. Which basically means that while it means no Jew will be left behind, but basically means that everything that we do in our life, Hashem works it out for us. And I know that's a theologically loaded sentence where I basically just destroyed the Bechira and said that whatever happens in your life is meant to be. Okay, so right, so we've entered into Ishvitz, but yeah.
I'm just confused whether the Orchaim Kadosh is holding up the brothers knew it was Yosef or didn't know it was Yosef. Because like it just seems like they knew it was Yosef. Then why would he say, I stole the cup and put it in Binyamin's bag, right? Because they know there's some like type of
right.
thing Yosef is doing. And if not, then I feel like quite answer three and the other year most.
And Imshadi doesn't know it's Yosef, but the Or Chaim is saying the Torah is written on many levels.
So,
and on a deeper level, the Torah is hinting that that when Yehuda and Yosef are talking, we have to look at that as a person named Yehuda and a person named Yosef speaking. We have to look at it as the concept of Yehuda and the concept of Yosef having an interaction. Of Yigashi love Yehuda. That's Mamash Gula.
When talking to Yosef, who let's just say he thinks is the vice of Egypt, he's saying, like, in kind of, not chutzpah, but in a holy chutzpah way, saying, I'm Yehuda, I'm Malchus of, like, I'm Israel, you won't last in the future, but I will, I'll outlast. That's what he's saying. Not to his brother Yosef.
Right?
Alright, fine.
You know why we're reading this now? You understand why it's Parshas Vayigash this Shabbos? Why is it Parshas Vayigash this Shabbos?
Totally you fucking that.
Oh, it's a geuladik parsha. It's a mamish, one of the most geuladik parshas in the Torah. Why is it such a geuladik parsha? Right, but why? Why now? Why right now? Why is this Shabbos parshas Vayigash?
Right after Hanukkah.
It's not that it's right after Hanukkah. It's that it's right before Hasar B'Teves. I mean, we're about to enter Golus. The calendar's about to enter Golus. The beginning of the end is Hasar B'Teves. The siege on Yerushalayim is Hasar B'Teves. The month of Teves is the zman of all the bad news, and therefore we're countering with a parsha filled with good news, filled with hopes of redemption, right? Filled with Yaakov getting the Shechina back. That's what happens in this week's parsha. For 22 years, Yaakov's been suffering. He's been depressed. If you could say such a thing about Yaakov, you know, for the last 22 years. What happens tomorrow? I don't know what today's calendar date is. What happened today in the Jewish history?
Tomorrow's
what's today?
Zion.
What's today?
Zion.
Today's Zion?
Vav Davis.
It is? I thought today is. Okay. What's today?
Today's
Nachas? Today's
Nachas. Today's Nachas because tomorrow's Ted.
No,
today's Zion.
Today's Zion. Today's Zion. So what's tomorrow? Chas. What happened on Chas?
Oh.
No, on Sunday we're fasting for 3 days. We're fasting. It's
3 days.
I mean, we fast one day to commemorate Chas Yud. What happened on Chas? What happened on Tas? What happened on Yud? My apologies. I thought it was Chas for a second. So it's good. So we can actually be mindful of it before it happens. I thought it was already happening. Okay. So what's tomorrow? Chas. What happened on Chas Tevis?
The siege.
No, that's Yud.
The korban
on Chas Tevis. The Torah was translated
into Greek,
into a foreign language, and the Medrash says, not the Medrash, Chazal say, it's in Masechet Sofer. It says that 3 days of darkness settled on the world. This is a really tomorrow's a really bad day in Jewish history. 3 days of darkness, a spiritual darkness, and maybe even some type of physical darkness, settled over the world when the Torah was translated. That's why in this week's parsha, to counter that. Yosef HaTzadik is what? says to the brothers, come close. Gishuna Eli, right? Come close. And I'll show you that I'm really Yosef. Because what did Yosef do? How does he prove that he's Yosef? Maybe he shows him the Bris Mila or speaks
Hebrew.
Speaks Lashon HaKodesh. Wow. He's bringing Lashon HaKodesh into Mitzrayim. He's maintaining Lashon HaKodesh in Mitzrayim, which is the opposite of what's happening tomorrow when Lashon HaKodesh is being taken out of Lashon HaKodesh into other domains. Why, by the way, 3 days of darkness? I once saw in a sefer from Rav Nosson Gestetner, Tzatzal. He said that 3 days of darkness, because the Torah we know has four parts to it. Pshat, Remez, Drush, and Sod. This is a good vart for when you're talking to your friend who's like only into Pshat and forgets that Torah actually has four dimensions to it. Just remind your friend that when the Torah is in Lashon HaKodesh, it has all of its dimensions. Pshat, Remez, Drush, and Sod. Rav Nosson Gestetner says there were 3 days of Chorban, of darkness, when they translated the Torah to another language, because in any other language all you're left with is Pshat. Three of the four dimensions are lost. Remez, Drush, and Sod are completely lost and are darkened by translating the Torah into foreign languages. Okay, so tomorrow's a dark day. Tomorrow's a dark day. And Tess, what's Tess?
Ezra Sofer
passed away. Okay, according to some, there might be other secret things that happened on the 9th. There's plenty of people that have given that shiur online. You can go online. Just
Simon
tells. I'll give you it. Alright, Willick's given this shiur.
I don't know.
Of Professor Dr. Sid Lyman, Schnerzy Lyman, has a shiur. I'm guessing that Rabbi Wiederblank just gave that shiur based on what I read in the elevator. On the way in today, he was speaking about halachos of gift giving and holiday parties, and something about the secret of us of the 9th of so that, I'm sure he gave that share. It's a very, you have to know that share. So you'll go online, you'll listen to it. I gave you a lot of people you could choose from. Ray Willicks is very good. I listened to Ray Willicks a bunch of years ago. I remember it was good. Yeah,
two,
from Mordechai Willick.
Two questions about. Like two different sides of what you're saying about if it was all for Tova, if it was not for Tova, because there's two different types of situations. One, we learned Ela Estora that they were the 10 accountable for the.
That's also a question. It's also a question in terms of how much they reconciled there.
Right, and because maybe it had to be done, but maybe not in that specific way, which is like the. You know, and then there's also the question of like Shimon and Dina. Rashi says like. Had to happen because that prophetic vision that was very important.
So these people are not these are people, but they're also not people, right? The proof is that the klipa of that is, by the way? The klipa is when people say, well, Avram wasn't really a person, right? Avram was an idea. That's a klipa of a truth. The same way people say, well, no, there really wasn't a person, the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov was just like an idea. Yeah, the Baal Shem Tov was an idea. He was also a person. Avram Avinu wasn't a person. Noach wasn't really a person, right? Adam and Chava were not really people. There's a deep truth to that klipa that says that these people never really existed because they are larger than life. In Achanami, they are an idea. They were also, as Orthodox Jews, we believe these people actually existed. Avram wasn't just an idea. Avram was a real person. But Avram obviously is also a concept. Is a spiritual concept, which is why. There's going to be a great degree of hashkacha pratis in the life of Avraham Avinu, maybe more so than ourselves. Baal Shem Tov came and said, no, everyone's an idea. Every one of us is an idea that's being expressed in the world. But we have to live within our free will as well. Okay, we're getting into some deep things. So anyway, but just getting back, so the 8th, 9th, and 10th, and the 10th, of course, again, is the siege, which is the beginning of the end, which is, again, why we're reading Parshas Vayigash, and this reconciliation of Yosef and the brothers. But part of that reconciliation of all of our struggles in life is the realization that don't look at it in this tiny little narrow way. That you might be the most angry at me, Yehuda, I was the one who sold you to Mitzrayim. Yeah, but now look how powerful you've become in Mitzrayim. And look how you've brought so much elukus to Mitzrayim, maintained the levels of tzidkus in Mitzrayim, and raised shvatim, tzadikim, shvatim. Ephraim and Menashe, you've literally raised shvatim in Mitzrayim. Okay. Let's go on. Alright, here's something, since we're getting closer to Shovavim. And when people have too much free time, they get themselves into trouble. So let's look at Pasuk Chaf Ches. Okay, and this should be Chizuk for Ben Azmanim, V'Hamei V'Nyav. Okay, let's go to the Achtarof. You see Achtarof? Go to the second little paragraph in Achtarof. Od Yirtza. Reish Tes Zayin, the left column at the top, for those who have the same edition. Od Yirtza V'Omer Achtarof. Yeah, let's just get to the Pasuk for a second. The Pasuk says, V'Yitze Echad Miti V'Omer Achtarof Taraf Tarof Toraf V'Lor Yisivat Heina. He's talking on behalf of Yaakov. Look how distraught Yaakov is going to be. It's bad enough. Yaakov said, I already lost one of my sons. He was torn to shreds. And what's going to be if Binyamin doesn't come back again? Yehuda's trying to convince Yosef to have Rachmanis on Yaakov by way of Binyamin. So look what he says. Ach taruf. Ach, we know. What's the klal in Gemara? Anytime you see the word ach, it's a miyud. Ach comes to limit. Right? Ach and rak come to limit something. What words come to expand? Right, S and
him.
and Gam. Right, the Gam and S come to expand, and Ach and Ra come to be Mamai. So what's Ach Tarof? Ach Tarof Perish Ach Miut Dafka Betrefus. The smallest thing that happened to Yosef. It's a really strong piece, actually. I'm only realizing now how strong it is. Ach, the Miut of Yosef's life was what? Was Tarof Toraf. That he was torn to shreds. By who? Whether it was the mistaken thought that he was ripped apart by a wild animal, or whether it was the fact that he had to endure so much at the hands of his brothers, or that he had to experience the pain of being sold like a lowly slave. Remind ourselves for a moment that the Tochacha ends by saying that you're gonna be sold back to slavery in Egypt. That's the last line of the Tochacha. The Tochacha actually says no one's gonna buy you, that's how pathetic you're gonna be. But that's like the lowest the person can be, to be sold as a slave to Egypt. There's an image of such a thing in the Torah, in the Tochacha, as that's like the lowest of the low. And yet, Yosef, by the way, Achtarof, that's the miut of your most difficult moments in life. You know what the most difficult thing in your life was? All the struggle, all the animosity you felt at the hands of your brothers, that was nothing. That's Achtarof. You know what the wild beast that really consumed you? You know what really destroyed you, Yosef? It was Eishes Potiphar. Now again, this is a mamash levina hafachu we've been talking about the last 3 weeks. That's his most outstanding moment in his life. That's how he becomes Yosef at Tzaddik. That's the greatest success of his life. What do you mean that destroyed him more than anything else? But look what he says. The wild animal that consumed you was that other man's wife who was pursuing you. I don't understand. I thought Yosef emerged victorious. Yes, victorious, but not unscathed. B'zeh ein miut. Ki kvar ba'avonos haya masha haya shagar malo la'abed yud banim sha'asir haya la'amid yud be'ez shvatim. Because the Gemara says that Yosef lost 10 drops of seed, 10 drops of Zara, when he almost sinned with Eishes Potiphar. Again, he wasn't standing on the other side of the room when she grabbed his garment. She was obviously standing very close to her, maybe even lying very close to her. And he lost 10 drops of seed because of her. And he lost 10 shvatim because of that. Yosef was supposed to have 12 shvatim, the same way that Yaakov had 12 shvatim. We're called Bnei Yaakov vi Yosef Sela, the Pasuk says. We're called Bnei Yosef. Yosef was supposed to be, like we spoke about, one of the Avos. Uve'emsaos harisha'a nashru menu yotipos, and because of her wickedness, he lost 10 tipos, v'lo yatsu mimenu elabes. So really, the greatest struggle of your life, Yosef, the achtarov, the miut of your difficulties, was everything we did to you. The worst thing that happened to you was that you were nichshol in arayos. Even at that moment, you were victorious. Now again, it's a very broken vart, because Rav Weinberger gave us a whole schmooze the other week and told us he became a tzaddik davka because after he lost 10 drops of seed, he was able to misgaber and say, well, I'm not going to lose 12 drops of seed. That's mamish, makes him a gibor, makes him a tzaddik. But you have to realize, this taiva can be the most destructive thing in a person's life. The scariest, most destructive taiva in the world. So a person has to watch out for it. It's the root. We spoke in one of the Tzidkas Tzadik Shirim. It's really the root of chet, a root of chet Eitz Hadas, that the Nachash saw Adam and Chava being intimate with each other, and he had a taiva for her and brought the entire world down, and we're still trying to fix it today. So Hamev and Yavin, we should be very careful when it comes to these inyanim. Okay, let's go. We have time for maybe two more quick pieces. Let's go to the moment where they reconcile. Yosef can't hold back anymore. Perek Mem Hei begins, V'le'achol. Yosef l'sapek. He can't handle it anymore. He can't restrain himself. And he's about to cry. And he kicks everyone out of the room. And he still whispers to them. The Rechaim HaKadosh writes in Pasuk Dalet. He's whispering to them. Because even though there's no one else in the room. Actually, you know what? I want to do the piece before that also. I'll just tell it to you outside. It says that Yosef kicks everyone out of the room. Right? And then he's crying so loudly that everyone can hear him. What's going on? So the Rechaim says, well, he's being very sensitive to the brothers, that when he reconciles with the brothers, he doesn't want, God forbid, to embarrass them, that the Egyptians should find out what he actually has to say, what happened, that they sold him. He doesn't want to embarrass them. But I like what the Rechaim does right at the end. Just look at that very end, right before Pasuk Dalet, the last couple lines of Aleph, right before Dalet, right before Vayomer Yosef. He says, but Yosef, when he cries out very loudly. And he says, he writes here, if you see it, great. If not, I'm sorry. Hareza magid ki masha mana hazulas bisvado leachav lo litzido ki hu kara b'kol v'shamu kol ha'ir asadavar. The only reason Yosef threw everyone out of the room was what? Was that he didn't want to embarrass the brothers. In terms of Mitzrayim knowing that Yosef cried like a baby, he didn't mind that they should know that. I don't know if this is what he's saying. But what I'm seeing in this Orach Chaim, and he concludes, El Etzad Boshes Echov, Hu Sha'asa Mitam Nisker. He kicked everyone out, not because he was embarrassed to show his emotions, but because he didn't want to embarrass the brothers. Mitzrayim's going to know that he's crying like a baby. And I don't know. I'm not sure maybe what. Maybe I'm reading into it too much, but I feel like in this Orach Chaim, he's saying that it was okay, that Yosef, person doesn't have to hide their emotions, I think is what I'm trying to say. And what the Orach Chaim is maybe hinting to. Again, if the emotions that I'm going to display are going to make someone else feel uncomfortable, so then that aspect has to be done in a proper way. If I'm going to cry and make everyone else feel strange about that, that's okay. Or if I'm going to embarrass someone because I'm crying about something that's nogeya to someone else, okay. But in terms of being, I guess, confident enough in whatever feelings one has to be prepared to display one's feelings, to allow myself to become vulnerable in front of others with the hope that people aren't going to judge me or to think badly of me, that I was willing to express myself in such an open way, I think is a good thing. And that's why he's highlighting that. Even though he kicked everyone out of the room, he wasn't hiding what was going on in the room. He's crying very loudly that all Mitzrayim was fully aware of it. Then in Pasuk Dalet, Yosef speaks to them in a whisper. Why is he speaking to them in a whisper? Everyone was kicked out of the room already. So he says, because we all know the famous statement that what? That the walls have ears. And therefore, even when you're speaking in private, you have to be concerned that maybe others will find out. So to show his added degree of sensitivity that no one else should find out, this conversation, Yosef spoke, even with no one else in the room, he spoke in a whisper. And then he finally says, I am Yosef, Ha'ur Avichai. And the very next two psukim, he continues to tell them, I am Yosef. Right? In Pasuk Dalet, he says, Ani Yosef Achicha. Well, he just told us that a second ago. So let's read this inside, and we'll wrap up with this last little section. He says to them, Ani Yosef. Right? And he says it twice. Tam shechazar, you see where I am? Ani Yosef achichem. Ani Yosef achichem. Tam shechazar pam beiz Ani Yosef. The reason he said it again, because there's two reasons that he has to convince them that he's Yosef. Number one, he's trying to convince them, I'm your brother, you don't have to be afraid. I'm not gonna take revenge against you. When he saw that they didn't respond to him, he figured it's for one of two reasons. Ha'echa, number one, first of all, they're terrified, they're embarrassed, like a ganav who's caught red-handed. It could be that they're not responding to him because they're so thoroughly embarrassed of the terrible things that they've done. And the second reason might be that they simply don't believe that this is actually Yosef. They don't know what to say because, seriously, there's no way this is Yosef. Shalohem minuhu shu Yosef. So therefore he says to them, I want you to realize you have nothing to be afraid of, and I'm going to prove to you that I'm Yosef. You have nothing to be afraid of because Ani Yosef Achicha. I'm reminding you again and again, I am your brother, I'm your brother, I'm your brother, and I want to show you that I have feelings of brotherly love towards you. And in terms of you wondering if I'm really Yosef, I am Yosef. You know how I can prove it to you? Asher Machartim Osi Mitzrayim, the Pasuk says. How else could I possibly know the details of what happened to your brother if I'm not him? And he quotes from the Medrash, the Yalkut, that says that Lo Yado Adam Afilu Navi. A Navi couldn't, right, know the details, the way he's constantly showing them all these details. So therefore, it must be that in fact I am Yosef. Okay, that's why he says I'm Yosef. Turn to Pasuk Ches. Now he says to them, now that I've convinced you that you don't have anything to worry about, I want to tell you that what? That I'm not angry at you. And I'm going to convince you of that. And I don't want you to be sad. Let's end with this. Ready? Look what he says. Look what he said. I'll read you the Pasuk. Pasuk Ches says, he says to them, "Ba'ata lo atem shalachtem osi hena. You didn't send me here. Ki ha'elokim. God sent me here. And he's pointed me as a leader in Mitzrayim to save the whole world, including you. Va'ata lo atem." Look what he says. Perish. L'seis tam lahasir melivim chashash asina. If you want to know why I'm not angry at you, look carefully at my words. L'val yachshu ki Yosef yistom osam v'yisna'im al asher nis'achzeru alav. How can Yosef not hate them after everything? The cruelty in which they treated him. To them was a foreign thing. How could you possibly not be angry at us? So you know what he says to them? Look what he says. And this is very honest. If you think I didn't hate you, of course I hated you. Until now I hated you. At the moment I was being sold, of course I hated you the way you hated me. And again, that's Kamayim Hapanim Lapanim, Kin Leva Adam Lada. If you hate someone, they're going to hate you back. So of course at the moment that I was sold, it was very strange in my eyes. How could my brothers do this to me? How could such hatred exist between brothers? But what does he say to them? What's the opening word of Pasuk Ches? V'ata. But now I have a maturity and an understanding. This was all divinely ordained. Achen ata achera oso. Everything I've gone through, my descent to Egypt and everything that happened, Yeda, it's clear to me. You were just God's messengers. You were not operating on your own. And therefore, I have no reason to what? To not reconcile with you. Now, how does this fit with what we learned last week? That as Baal Bechira, we have Da Mincha in 30 seconds. As a Baal Bechira, how do we fit this in? As a Baal Bechira, I thought a Baal Bechira can make choices that are not divinely ordained. So I think the answer is the following. Rav Yaakov Galinsky one time was approached. He went to pay a shiva call. He went to visit a family that was sitting shiva. They had a daughter who had terrible asthma, and she had a terrible asthma attack, and they couldn't find, they had three different asthma devices to help their daughter. And they were searching high and low in the house, and they couldn't find it, and the girl, Nebuch, she passed away. And they were so angry at themselves, and they found all three devices in one spot, in her room. And they were so distraught. And Rabbi Yaakov Galinsky said, listen, when we're in the moment, we have to believe in our Bechira. He said, but afterwards, anytime it's an afterwards, we have to say it's from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That story requires a lot of perish, and that mahalach, to understand the Bechira, requires a lot of perish. But also doesn't require so much parish. Meaning, we have to make the choice and believe in my ability to make a choice when I'm in the moment. But I also have to always be able, as a Jew who believes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at the end of the day, has the final say, that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu chooses, that's halacha l'maisa. And I'll tell you such a strong vart from Rav Huttner, Zatzal, that Rav Volbi quotes in his writings on Chumash. The famous question on the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva 5-5. Parakei Alachahei, where the Rambam says free will and God's omniscience is the most complicated question of all, and you can't understand it. So what does the Ravid say on the Rambam? No? Famous Ravid, what does the Ravid say back to the Rambam? So then don't bring it up. Why are you telling people just to confuse them? Right? You're introducing people to the questions, and you're saying, but there's no real good answer to this. So the Ravid says, so if you don't have an answer, so don't expose people to things that they can't understand. That's a very famous Rambam, you have to know, that's a famous Rambam in the Ravid, in Hilchos Tshuva 5-5, Parakei Alachai. So Rav Volbi in his writings on Chumash, I don't remember what parsha it's in, maybe it's here, in one of these parshios, Rav Volbi quotes from Rav Huttner, which is interesting. And he says Rav Huttner gave the following explanation, that the Rambam is writing a book of halacha.
And the Rambam is teaching you that this is the halacha. The confusion is the halacha. The confusion is the halacha. The fact that there's going to be questions and they're going to be unresolved. Why is the Rambam telling us this? He's just making us confused. No, the Rambam is teaching us how to live our lives. That you're going to have these moments and you have to learn how to live with it. That's the halacha. That's the metzius. And that's sort of the answer here. That Yosef says, listen, at the time I was as angry as anyone would be. But halichos olam lo, we have to keep going and we live with the question, and sometimes we're frustrated, and eventually there's an answer. Va'ata. We get to that va'ata. The way all the Svarim say that the moment that Yosef said, Ani Yosef Oda Vichai, is the same way Mashiach's gonna say, Ani Mashiach, and HaKadosh Baruch who's here to introduce himself. And we have that awesome moment where we reconcile all of the questions. Lastly, he says, when Yaakov comes to Mitzrayim, did Yaakov never find out, and this is a question we all are curious about, and I have to share with you, and then we'll dive mincha. Did Yaakov never find out what had happened? Yosef says, you don't have to be afraid, you don't have to be upset. This is all from God. So the Ruach Chaim says, maybe he's giving the brothers a way to have this conversation with Yaakov. Because Yaakov, of course, is going to find out, he says. They're going to talk to them, what happened all these years? So now, Yaakov will also be okay with it. After all of the suffering of Yaakov, he'll be okay with it. You know why he'll be okay with it? He'll be okay with it because Yaakov will also understand that this is all part of Hashem's divine plan. The Ramban, by the way, says that Yaakov never had that conversation, and Yosef and the brothers made sure that they would never have that conversation. Yosef was never left alone with Yaakov to have that conversation. The Ramban develops that idea, and they never had that conversation. And Yaakov never really found out what had truly happened with Yosef, which is an amazing lesson in and of itself. As someone once came, a bacha once came to the Leib Simcha, the fifth Ger Rebbe, and said, I did all these averos and I'm feeling very broken about it. And the Leib Simcha said, the Ramban taught us that Yaakov never found out what happened to Yosef, you gotta go fight there. 22 years, just can it, whatever. What happened, happened. Just gotta move on. You did averos in the past, you gotta go fight there. As the Pasuk says in Vayera, Al Tabit Acharecha, when Sodom is being destroyed, don't look back, Va'al Ta'amod. As the Sfarim explained, that when you look back, then you get stuck. Exactly. Don't look back and don't get stuck. Just keep going weiter. And Yosef cries one last time, and the Ruach Chaim HaKadosh says that he's an Ach Nemanhu. He cries over each one of the brothers individually. Don't think he's just crying over Binyamin. He hugs, kisses, and cries over each brother. Complete reconciliation. And this is mamish the story of Mashiach, of Yehuda and Yosef reconciling. So Mirtz Hashem, we should be zochet to see it with our own eyes in our days. Mashiach. Ashrei Yosef.